We sang the song, Faithful Men. And I want to preach about three of them who were not mentioned in that song because it would be impossible for the songwriter to have mentioned them all. But the reference is found in Hebrews chapter 11. So I'd like you to go to Hebrews chapter 11, where I'm going to make one quick reference, and then we're going to go to Daniel chapter 3, where they are talked about for the entire chapter. So Hebrews chapter 11, they are not mentioned by name here, but they are mentioned by what took place in their lives. And so I'm going to preach this morning on the power of a life that is dedicated to God. I want to challenge you about your own life and whether you have ever dedicated your life to God. You say, but Pastor, I'm saved. I understand that. But have you ever dedicated your life to God? Because there are times, you know, when we get saved and we have this basic understanding of I'm a sinner, I know I need to be saved, I know that Christ died on the cross for my sins, and there's nothing I can do to save myself, and I turn to Him completely for my salvation. And so we know the very basics. Then as we grow as a Christian, we come to the place, I believe, where we ought to say, as Paul says in Romans chapter 12, I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice. Where you come to the place where you realize, you know what, I'm saved, but I believe there should be more in my life. As a Christian, I need to go to the next level. So I'm going to talk about dedication. Dedicating your life to God. Something I did on July the 3rd, 1979, when I surrendered to travel with Neighborhood Bible Time. And I was challenged about dedication. And it was on that day when I told the Lord, Lord, whatever you want with my life. I'm a Christian. I had been for years. Lord, I want to dedicate myself to you for whatever you have for me. And I tell you, folks, that's the greatest thing you can do with your life. You say, I'm scared of what God's going to call me to do. You know what? If He calls you to do it, He's going to equip you. And if He calls you to do it, and then if you don't do it, you'll be the most unhappy Christian there is. Oh, God may call me to the mission field. Then go and be happy and realize this will be the life, I'm going to put it this way, of adventure that God has for me. There's no greater thing than to be right in the center of God's will. But I believe there are so many Christians who fail to dedicate their lives to God because they're scared of what God's going to do in their life. Folks, why would you be scared of what God's going to do? There's an excitement there when you do what God has called you to do. So I want you to see the power of a life that is dedicated to God. We read about these men in Hebrews chapter 11, and you'll see what the writer of Hebrews says in verse 32, and what shall I more say, for the time would fail me to tell of Gideon and of Barak and of Samson and so forth. And he says, time would fail me. So sure enough, he's not able to go through all the names. Time would fail me, he says. Then you get to verse 34, and it says in verse 33, who through faith, now jump to verse 34, quenched the violence of fire. Who through faith quenched the violence of fire. That word quenched is related to our word asbestos. And it means to extinguish. These men, by faith, extinguished the power or the violence of fire. Who were those three men? Three companions of Daniel. Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. You know them by their pagan names, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. But their Hebrew names are Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. They extinguished the power of fire. How could they do that? How can you do this? You say, I'm not threatened with fire. Well, let me read you what it says in Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 16. Above all, taking the shield of faith, wherewith ye shall be able to quench all the fiery darts of the wicked. You say you're not threatened with fire. I say if you're a believer, you're threatened with it. And you need to have a life that is dedicated to God. You need to have the power of a life dedicated to God. Listen to what Peter says in 1 Peter 4:12. Beloved, think it not strange concerning the fiery trial. You say you're not threatened with fire? Have you never had a fiery trial? Which is to try you as though some strange thing happened unto you. The key to having a life that is dedicated to God is what you'll find in Daniel chapter 3, verse 28. Would you look at that verse, please? It's almost to the end of the verse, and it says, they yielded their bodies. They yielded their bodies. This yielding was based upon faith, as we see in the faith chapter, Hebrews 11. But now I want us to go back to Daniel. Let's focus on the book of Daniel, and I want you to note something. Beginning with chapter 3, Daniel 3, 5, and 6, rather than being direct prophecies, these are historical chapters in nature. They describe the moral condition during the reign of King Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon, of his grandson and successor Belshazzar, and then Darius the Mede during the times of the Gentiles. Do we live in the times of the Gentiles today? Absolutely. And so I believe we can take what happened to them and apply it to our lives. We live in the times of the Gentiles. We live in the time of the heathen, the pagans, and we face things today, maybe not being thrown into a fiery furnace like they were, but we face the fiery trials. We face the temptation of this world. And they faced it. And so can we. Daniel 3 shows us the power of a life dedicated to God. Listen, even in the midst of corruption. So let's read verses 1 through 7 to start with. And here's my first point. I want you to see in verses 1 through 7 the counterpart to a life dedicated to God. The counterpart to a life dedicated to God. Verse 1, Nebuchadnezzar the king made an image of gold whose height was 80 cubits, that's 90 feet, and the breadth thereof 6 cubits, that's 9 feet. So here's this image, 9 stories high. He set it up in the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. Then Nebuchadnezzar the king sent to gather together the princes, the governors, and the captains, the judges, the treasurers, the counselors, the sheriffs, and all the rulers of the provinces to come to the dedication of the image which Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. Then the princes, the governors and captains, the judges, the treasurers, the counselors, the sheriffs, and all the rulers of the provinces were gathered together under the dedication of the image that Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. And they stood before the image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Then an herald cried aloud, to you it is commanded, O people, nations, and languages, that at what time ye hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, dulcimer, and all kinds of music, ye fall down and worship the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar the king hath set up. And whoso falleth not down and worshipeth shall the same hour be cast into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. Therefore, at that time, when all the people heard the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, and all kinds of music, all the people, the nations, and the languages fell down and worshiped the image, the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar, the king, had set up. This is the counterpart to a life dedicated to God. To whom are these people dedicated? To whom are most people dedicated today? To a false god. And so let's look at this counterpart. It's interesting that the production of this image comes from the king's encounter with Jehovah in chapter 2. Remember chapter 2? The king had a dream. He asked all the wise men, all the astrologers, and all the kingdom of Babylon, come before me and tell me, what did I dream, and what is the interpretation thereof? And basically, they said, you're crazy. You tell us what you dreamed, then we'll tell you the interpretation. He said, I know you're trying to get me. I'll know you're telling me the truth if you first of all tell me what I dreamed. And then you can tell me what the interpretation is. Nobody could do it. So he sent word out, kill them all. All the wise men, all the astrologers, kill them. And they went out to do what he said. They came to Daniel, and Daniel said, wait, God will give me the words. And Daniel came before him, and he said, here's the interpretation. King, here's your dream, first of all, and here's the interpretation. And at the end, Nebuchadnezzar almost worships Daniel. But that image, what he had dreamed about, was an image, a man. Now, in chapter 3, this pagan, apparently, from what he had dreamed, takes a corruption of what he had dreamed, and he builds his own image. And instead of glorifying the God who gave him the dream, he glorifies the man in his dream. Romans 1, 21 to 23, because that when they knew God, they glorified him not as God, neither were thankful, but became vain in their imaginations, and their foolish heart was darkened. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools and changed the glory of the incorruptible God into an image made like to corruptible man, and to birds, and to four-footed beasts, and creeping things. They take what God is, and they make it into an image made like to a corruptible man. If that doesn't describe what is taking place here in Daniel chapter 3, then I think we need to understand that it is. So we can tell the character of something by studying its opposite. We can tell the character of a truly dedicated believer by studying somebody who's dedicated to something else, to someone else. So look at these who are dedicated to ungodliness. Here's my points about these people. Their dedication, number one, is compulsory. Let me ask you something. Were you made to be here this morning? Were you threatened that if you weren't here this morning, somebody would come after you? So this is not compulsory. Now, you may feel compelled by the Holy Spirit. You may feel compelled by what you've heard preached here that, you know what, I need to be there. But in the end, you have the choice. You are not compelled to be here this morning. The ungodly, their dedication is compulsory. When they ask you to do something, it's not asking. They tell you, you must worship in this way. So the idol and its makers command. God pleads. God entreats. Look at verse 6 of Daniel chapter 3, because there you're going to see a case of state-enforced religion. State-enforced religion. If you don't fall down and worship, you'll be cast into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. This has always amused me, that when somebody compels you to worship, you can do it on the outside, but on the inside you're gritting your teeth saying, oh, I hate this, but I'll do it because they're making me do it. Scofield has this note, there will be increasing stress upon worship at the end of the age, but it will be satanically directed. This characterizes the time of the Gentiles. For the last 200 and some years, the United States has been an exception, but folks, it's getting to the place more and more where there's almost becoming a state-enforced religion. You will accept homosexuality. You will tolerate it. You will do this. You will. We are losing the freedoms we once had. And what they say is religion, and that they disagree, they don't like religion, that is their religion. They have their own religion of atheism and what you shall do. It was in response to state-enforced religion that brought men to these shores in the first place. Now the worship of man, as seen in this chapter, is again coming to the forefront. You get into the New Testament. Roman emperor worship was forced. Communism is forced religion. Islam is forced religion. Humanism is forced religion. You must do it. False religion does not hesitate to use force. Roman Catholicism is an example of that. In the 1500s and earlier, there were the Grand Inquisitions. where people were burned at the stake by the Roman Catholic Church when they did not do what they wanted them to do. It was compulsory. Their dedication is not only compulsory, it is idolatrous. It is the idolatry and the deification of man. The times of the Gentiles produces a religion that is opposed to God. 90 feet tall and 6 cubits or 9 feet wide. Again, the Bible says 60 cubits and 6. And it reminds me of the number of the beast, which is the number of the man, and his name or his number is 600, 66. Everyone is dedicated. There's not a person here this morning who's not dedicated. You're dedicated. The question is, what are you dedicated to? Every person in this world is dedicated. So this morning, I'm not preaching about the power of a life dedicated. Again, the title of the message is what? The power of a life dedicated to God. You're already dedicated. Every man is dedicated to himself. It's like what the Bible says in Ephesians chapter 6. No man ever did not love his own body. You already love yourself. You're already dedicated to yourself. But you're dedicated to other things. Some men are dedicated to their job. Some people are dedicated to sports. There's nothing wrong necessarily with those things, but Christianity is not inclusive. Christianity is exclusive. Only to God should you truly be dedicated. But the counterpart to a life dedicated to God makes man worship something he has made, something to usurp the place of God. So their dedication is compulsory. It's idolatrous. Thirdly, it's ostentatious. It's showy. Dedication here is to be attended by the prominent officials. Did you get tired of me reading all the names listed in chat in verses 2 and 3? You said, why is he reading those names again? Because they're written both times. Let's read them again just for a kick. The princes, the governors, the captains, the judges, the treasurers, the counselors, the sheriffs, all the rulers. And then he repeats that again in verse 3. What's being said here? If they would be coming to this dedication, the common people would be coming as well. The tactic works. You get all the leaders to do it, and the people will follow. And what's this accompanied with? Music. Grandiose music. Emotionally moving music. Understand something. The devil, the world know how to use music. And it's used right here. Why does it have to be accompanied by music? Music moves. You hear Tchaikovsky's music, you hear the 1812 overture, and you'll soon start tapping your foot to it. I do. When those cannons go off, I'm moved by that. When I go to the grocery store, something moves me to buy Breyer's ice cream every time. And I think it must be the music that they're playing in that store. Something. But music moves you. I mean, there have been studies, they say they play the right music that gets you in the mood to, you know, the only thing I've never been able to figure out is why they play rock music in a restaurant. Because it gives you indigestion. Why do they play it? I'm not coming back here. This food's horrible. If they play better music, you'd have better digestion. It's ostentatious. So there's the counterpart to a life dedicated to God. It's compulsory. You have to do it. It's idolatrous. It's showy. It's ostentatious. But secondly, I want you to see in verses 8 to 12 the challenge of a life dedicated to God. You say, I want to dedicate myself to God. You better understand the challenge. You better understand the price you're going to pay. Let's read about it in verses 8 to 12. Wherefore, at that time, certain Chaldeans came near and accused the Jews. They spake and said to the king Nebuchadnezzar, O king, live forever. Thou, O king, hast made a decree that every man that shall hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, and dulcimer, and all kinds of music, shall fall down and worship the golden image. And whoso falleth not down and worshipeth, that he should be cast into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. There are certain Jews whom thou hast set up over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have not regarded thee. They serve not thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. By the way, are there other Jews here? There are certain Jews. What a bad thing. I mean, you got these Christians. Oh, there's that certain church. Lord, there's people who go to, there are certain people in that church who will not bow. There are certain, and you see other Christians are doing it, which makes these look like a bunch of extremists. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were a bunch of extremists. Legalists. The challenge of a life dedicated to God, number one, it's accusing. I go back to verse 8. They're being accused. They accused the Jews. Three men whom Nebuchadnezzar had earlier promoted. Go back to chapter 1, look at verses 19 and 20. And the king communed with them, and among them all was found none like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Therefore stood they before the king, and in all matters of wisdom and understanding that the king inquired of them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and astrologers that were in all his realm. Then in chapter 2, when Daniel interprets the dream, go to verse 49 of chapter 2. Then Daniel requested of the king, and he set Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego over the affairs of the province of Babylon, but Daniel sat in the gate of the king. These men had just been promoted in 249, and in 3:1, they're faced with temptation. And now, the cause of their promotion, which is due to their allegiance to God and his commandments, is now in direct conflict with the king. You know what? You may be promoted because of your strong Christian character. Men may respect you because you have a strong Christian character, but that doesn't matter when that character produces allegiance to God, which now offends them. There's no permanent victory on this earth, folks. One of the greatest blunders of Christians is to assume that perfection and morality will last on this earth. The challenge of a life dedicated to God, you will be accused. You dedicate your life to God, you will be accused. Daniel himself in chapter 6, third in the kingdom, he prays to God every day. Three times, he goes before that window as he's always done. The others accuse him before the king. Say, king, let's have this new law. The king obviously doesn't know what Daniel does every day. We have this law. They've watched Daniel. That anyone who bows down to any god and prays to any god other than you will be thrown in a den of lions. And they watched him. And sure enough, they were able to accuse him. The challenge of a life dedicated to God is accusing. Number two, it is religious. Verse 11, it has to do with worship. You know, folks, challengers, those who challenge your life dedicated to God, they worship too. They worship the image, verse 10. Here's the worship of man versus the worship of God. I'm going to worship man. Others say, I'm going to worship God, the Christian says. Somebody, it's Ann Coulter, wrote a book once called Treason. She said this, I thought this was interesting. Quote, conservatives believe man was created in God's image, while liberals believe they are gods. All of the behavioral tics of the liberals proceed from their godless belief that they can murder the unborn because they, the liberals, are themselves gods. They try to forcibly create equality through affirmative action and wealth redistribution because they are gods. They flat out lie with no higher power to constrain them because they are gods. They adore immorality because man is just an animal and they are their gods. You see, folks, they are religious too. Your dedication will be challenged once you give your life to God. It will be challenged. Thirdly, the challenge of a life dedicated to God is not only accusing religious, it is conspicuous. You will stand out. Again, I go to verse 12. 3, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, these men have not regarded thee, O king. You stand out like a light in the midst of darkness, because as a believer, you are light. There's the challenge of a life dedicated to God. We move on. Verses 13 to 23, we see the character of a life dedicated to God. The character of a life dedicated to God. Look at verse 13. Then Nebuchadnezzar, in his rage and fury, commanded to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Then they brought these men before the king. Nebuchadnezzar spake and said unto them, is it true, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? Do not ye serve my gods, nor worship the golden image which I have set up? Now, if ye be ready, that at what time ye hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, and dulcimer, and all kinds of music, ye fall down and worship the image which I have made, well. But if ye worship not, ye shall be cast the same hour into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. And who is that God that shall deliver you out of my hands? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we are not careful to answer thee in this matter. If it be so, our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of thine hand, O king. But if not, be it known unto thee, O king, that we will not serve thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. Then was Nebuchadnezzar full of fury, and the form of his visage was changed against Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Therefore he spake and commanded that they should heat the furnace 1 7 times more than it was wont to be heated. And he commanded the most mighty men that were in his army to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and to cast them into the burning fiery furnace. Then these men were bound in their coats, their hosen, and their hats, and their other garments, and were cast into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. Therefore, because the king's commandment was urgent, and the furnace exceeding hot, the flame of the fire slew those men that took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And these three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell down, bound into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. You see the character of these men? You see the character of these guys? Let's look at the character of a life dedicated to God. Because so much of worship today that is demanded is artificial. In fact, all worship that is demanded is artificial. Notice that in verse 14, the king does not even wait for them to answer his question. He immediately proceeds to demand their outer conformity, verse 15 and following. He does not press the inward. Folks, false worship emphasizes outer. True worship emphasizes inner. You say, then why do you say dress up for the communion service tonight? Why should you do that? I thought we were emphasizing the inner and not the outer. Because it is the inner that should be affecting the outer. And by example, we ought to be speaking to others. Chris, you need to turn the fans up a little bit higher. It's getting hot in here and people are fanning themselves, if you would, please. It's the outer that sometimes is emphasized by men. We too, folks, need to make sure that the inner is affecting the outer. The woman at the well was concerned about the outer. Remember what she said? Our fathers worshipped in this mountain, and ye say, talking to Jesus, that in Jerusalem is the place where men ought to worship. Notice Jesus' reply in John 14, woman, believe me, the hour cometh when ye shall neither in spirit, where ye shall neither in this mountain, nor yet at Jerusalem worship the Father. True worshipers shall worship the Father in spirit and in truth. For the Father seeketh such to worship him. God is a spirit, and they that worship him must worship him in spirit and in truth. It is an inner thing. Listen, if your religion is only outer, where that is always emphasized to the exclusion of the inner, there's a problem there. I have always found it interesting that Islam says you will bow down and you will say whatever it is, Allah Akbar or whatever. And once you say that, okay, we'll let you go. So I can say that with my mouth. My heart may not be with it, but that'll satisfy you. It's exactly right. Let's look at the character of a life dedicated to God. Number one, it's courageous. You know what the Bible says? God has not given us the spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. You look at their answer in verse 16, and you almost think that it's arrogant, but folks, it is not an arrogant answer. We are not careful to answer you, King. It's not arrogant, it's full of faith. It literally means we do not need to give you an answer concerning this matter. King, you know us. You know us. We don't need to give you an answer. Our position is already known. And even in the face of a furious king, their minds had already been made up. Somebody once said that bulldog believers are trained at obedience school. They're even given a second chance in verse 15. And you know what? Sometimes we're dedicated until reality sets in. We go, wow, he's serious. Wow. And this is what's happening in Christianity, folks. Well, you know, we're going to take a stand. Then when reality sets in and we realize these people are serious, then we go, okay, all right. Not these men. Their character is courageous. Secondly, it's confident. Verses 17 and 18, confident. Not that God would deliver them. They were confident they would not bow. They had no doubt that God could deliver, but they did not know that he would. Folks, that is complete surrender. God is sovereign. Note something. Faith in God does not always make things comfortable for his followers. You dedicate your life to God, it's not always going to be comfortable. Many would say, but I may lose my job. What are you dedicated to? Politicians say, but I may not get reelected. You know the character of politicians. So loyalty to God is based upon success then? Perceived success? Here is a faith that disregards the consequences. It is confident. Oh, the Christians would weigh God's commands, not by the negative reactions from this world, but by whether I've obeyed him. Verses 19 to 23, the raging king stood helpless in the presence of these men. He could do nothing. He could not force them. All he could do was get mad and start spitting. He was so mad. By the way, there's no question the fire is real. Because even those who cast them in were immediately burned. So then we see the consequence of a life dedicated to God. Our last point, the consequence. Number one, the consequence is convincing. Look at verses 24 to 27. Then Nebuchadnezzar the king was astonished and rose up in haste and spake and said unto his counselors, did not we cast three men bound into the midst of the fire? They answered and said unto the king, true, O king. He answered and said, lo, I see four men loose, walking in the midst of the fire, and they have no hurt, and the form of the fourth is like the Son of God. Then Nebuchadnezzar came near to the mouth of the burning fiery furnace and spake and said, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, ye servants of the Most High God, come forth and come hither. Then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came forth of the midst of the fire. And the princes, governors, captains, and the king's counselors being gathered together saw these men upon whose bodies the fire had no power, nor was an hair of their head singed, neither were their coats changed, nor the smell of fire had passed on them. I see four men, he says in verse 25. I see four men. Understand something. Not until these three had made their commitment and by faith were cast into the fire was the fourth figure visible. We would say, hey, God's in there. We can go. They went in. And after they had moved by faith, then God came and joined them, honoring their faith. You see, we say, show me that I will win and I'll risk it. That, folks, is not faith. That is not dedication. Verse 27, the fire had no power. Hebrews 11, they extinguished the power of fire. They extinguished it. I've told you before that when I was a child, my parents would get these, some of you, I don't know, Alex, if you know what an LP is. Yeah, it's a record. And it's something you put on, and then you put the needle on it, and it goes around and around, the needle plays it. And I would play this one, all that was Bible stories. And they had the one of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And it wasn't music, it was the story. And I and my brothers would sit and listen to those all the time. But I would love to look at the jacket cover. You see, back then, the jacket cover, you know, was pretty big. You could see it. And so I would look at the jacket cover, and there on the back, when it came to the story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they were dressed in winter clothing, and they had these hand warmers like the ladies used to have, those round ones. They had their hands in there, and they were in the fire shivering. And I've always thought of that. And when it's described here in verse 21, these men were bound in their coats, their hosen, their hats, and other garments. Here they are dressed like it's wintertime, it almost seems. And the fire does nothing. Wow. Fear not, for I have redeemed thee. I have called thee by thy name. Thou art mine. When thou walkest through the fire, thou shalt not be burned, neither shall the flame kindle upon thee. For I am the Lord thy God, the Holy One of Israel, thy Savior. That's what God says in Isaiah 43, 1-3. You know what? When you're tried by fire, remember, you will not be burned. What a promise. What a promise. I find it interesting. They had to be called out of the fire. Now, come on. If you're in a fire, the first thing you want to do is, okay, I'm alive. I'm going to walk out of here. They're walking around in the fire. They're not even looking for the exit. Then the king has to call them. Guys, come on out. It's convincing. Listen, the consequences of a life dedicated to God is convincing. Why aren't more people being convinced today of Christianity? Because there aren't Christians who are truly dedicated to God. And that's my second point. The consequences of a life dedicated to God is changing. If believers were truly dedicated to God, we would see changes in our families, in our church, and in our nation. But the problem is we don't truly have people who are dedicated to God. Who changed? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? It changed the number one man in the land, Nebuchadnezzar. Verse 28, then Nebuchadnezzar spake and said, blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel and delivered his servants that trusted in him and have changed the king's word and yielded their bodies, that they might not serve nor worship any god except their own God. Therefore, I make a decree. Who's doing the changing here? Nebuchadnezzar is. That every people, nation, and language which speak anything amiss against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be cut in pieces, and their houses shall be made a dunghill, because there is no other God that can deliver after this sort. Then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego to the province of Babylon. They've already been promoted. They take a stand. Now they're promoted even higher. You see, the consequence of a life dedicated to God is changing. His word was altered. Note that not even the clothes of these three men were changed. Nothing changed about them. And the religious cry today is for us to change, to join them. For us to change, so that we can bring more people in to see that we're changing and becoming more like them. The cry today is to infiltrate, not to separate. The cry today is to break down the walls. Folks, nothing is accomplished when we do that. When we stand by God's word, we change the world. But what's happening is the church is being changed today. They yielded their bodies, verse 28. They risked their own lives. They gave their bodies. And it reminds me of Romans 12, 1. I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice. Folks, you won't see change until you're dedicated to God. I believe that this chapter foreshadows the great tribulation when men will have to bow down to the image the Antichrist creates. But there will be some who will say, I won't do it. Who will be saved after the rapture. But as we apply this to today, no wonder so many Christians are powerless in the face of trials and temptations. They're not dedicated to the Lord. No wonder so many Christians are not willing to do things that are hard. They're not dedicated to the Lord. Remember, the dedication of these three men was based upon their faith. And true faith will show itself in dedication to God. I ask you, what are you dedicated to? You're dedicated to something. You're dedicated to someone. You'll know because everything revolves around that one thing. If you're dedicated to something or someone other than God and His Word, you will have no power to face the onslaughts of Satan. But when you're dedicated to God, greater is He that is in you than he that is in the world. And we have all the power we need. That's the power of a life dedicated to God. May we be like Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego.